right, let's get her going here. The Real Kipper and Bourne Show. This is the national edition. We are live on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver, and Sportsnet 960 in Calgary. It's Hour of Real Kipper and Bourne, brought to you by Bet365. In a few minutes, we'll welcome in Ian Mendez. Covers the Ottawa Senators for The Athletic. Former Sportsnet broadcaster. Shared a few road trips.
A milkshake?
With Ian Mendez.
Two straws?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. Yeah, including New Year's Eve in New York City.
Oh, yeah?
Covering...
you guys go to the ball drop and that Sea of Humanity?
We were close.
Did you? I don't think you'd pay me to be there.
No. You couldn't.
Obviously, we got to touch base on the breaking news of the day, just in terms of... Oh, man. Five players told to surrender in connection with the 2018 World Junior investigation. This was, of course, brought to us by the Globe and Mail. They've been told to surrender in connection with allegations of a sexual assault in June of 2018 to a woman, on a woman by members of the 2018 hockey club. It's been a while, JB, to the point where a lot of people weren't even sure where this investigation was going. A lot of
would there be charges?
Would there be anything at all? It was almost like it was forgotten. And a lot of people thought maybe this thing could actually just disappear. Mm-hmm. But that certainly isn't the case today.
Yeah, and I would say in terms of, you know, justice, and, you know, the woman involved, I'm glad it didn't disappear. I guess this is the first step in towards getting things figured out. You know, there has to be an endpoint at some point, so we got to get started. And, you know, impossible to anticipate where it's going to go from here and the cascading effects of it. But I'm glad to see, you know, they're getting proceedings underway.
Yeah, it's like I heard Merrick say today, it's the end of the beginning.
Yeah.
So... it's kind of getting into the meat of it here. The London police, there's a statement from them today, too, that we understand there's significant public interest in relation to the sexual assault investigations dating back to 2018. While we are unable to provide an update at this time, we anticipate that the London Police Service will hold a press conference on Monday, February 5th, 2024, to share further details. The location and timing of the press conference will be shared once details are confirmed. Thank you for your patience. So that's not this coming Monday. It's the following Monday, the 5th.
Okay. Let's welcome in Ian Mendez, senior writer for The Athletic, based in Ottawa, covering the Senators. Ian, thanks a lot for joining us. I mean, we're going to talk Ottawa Senators, of course, but just in your thoughts, a lot of people have been waiting one way or the other on news or updates. How surprised were you to hear the news that the whole hockey world is hearing today?
Yeah, Kipper, it's as you guys were saying, it has taken a long time, right? It's over 2 years since the kind of around 2 years since this story first broke. And what I find really fascinating is the London Police Department has called that press conference for February the 5th. I can't recall too many instances where somebody calls a press conference for 10 days from now. It's usually a little bit more imminent, right? And pressing. So, I think we're all trying to be very cautious, try not to connect the dots as obvious as they may seem with where certain players are and what they might be doing. But it does feel like, obviously, that there is some sort of break here. And we have to give full credit to Robin Doolittle of the Globe and Mail, who has been all over this story from the get-go. And really, I think there's been so much attention and so much scrutiny, guys, on this story that the London Police Department can't get this wrong. And for people who are saying maybe this took too long, I think they have no margin for error. There's a tremendous amount of scrutiny on this case. There's going to be a lot of questions, regardless of how this turns out. So I think they had to make sure that they were absolutely 1,000% sure. And I guess we're going to get some answers on the 5th of February.
Ian, do you think the result of the case matters in terms of NHL fallout, like what happens for these players, or is it just being tied to this at all will have some detriment to their careers? I'm trying to anticipate, you know, what this means for the players involved.
It's a great question, Justin, because I think right now, I think you have to go with a presumption of innocence of everybody involved, right? I think our judicial system is predicated on that. I think even the National Hockey League, everybody that's involved here, that's what they're going under the assumption. And so what I'm interested, you know, what I think is interesting here, guys, is that there's almost like three investigations that are kind of concurrently happening, right? There's the London police investigation. The NHL has had its own investigation, and Hockey Canada has had its own investigation. And I think that the latter two, Hockey Canada and the NHL, are simply waiting to hear what the London Police Department says, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think the NHL wanted to come out and exonerate anybody only to have the London Police Department say, actually, they're guilty, right? So I do think that the playing future of any players involved is going to be tied to what comes out of the London Police Department on the 5th of February.
We're talking to Ian Mendes, senior writer for The Athletic. Ian, I know you've got a great rapport with a lot of broadcasters, writers, a lot of them your competitors, but do you have a sense on how big this story is about to get, from a hockey story to a Canadian human interest story to international? Like, what are we in for moving forward when it comes to coverage?
Yeah, Kipper. No, I think it's a significant story, right? Because I think you're talking about some of the dynamics that are so ingrained in Canadian culture, right? There's hockey, there's hockey culture, there's power dynamics, there's money, there's influential people. There's all the elements for, I think, public interest to be at its height, at its high point here. And remember, when you go back to the summer of 2022 and you saw all of those sponsors leaving, these were big sponsors, right? These are the Canadian Tires and the Scotiabanks. And like, these are some of the biggest sponsors in Canada with the deepest pockets saying, we're not going to stand by and support this with Hockey Canada. So I think, guys, this thing sort of came in waves, right? And I think the summer of 2022, it was at a high point. It kind of went away. My anticipation is we're about to hit another high point here. And I think all of, you know, Hockey Canada will be in for another reckoning. You know, the players involved will be in a reckoning. There's going to be a lot of questions. And I do think that this is going to be, what did Merrick say? This is the end of the beginning type of thing. And that's probably a good way of phrasing it, is that I do think that we're into the next phase here, and it's going to have a tremendous amount of interest in the public here in Canada.
Well, stick to Ian Mendes and The Athletic. Stick to sportsnet.ca for the latest on this developing story. In the meantime, you had a chance to kind of hang out with new owner Michael Andlauer.
Yeah.
Prior to the Montreal Canadian game. Not often, Ian, that writers or broadcasters get to hang out with owners at any time at all. So I know you wrote about it in The Athletic, but share a little light on that experience.
Yeah, and you know, I had reached out to Michael Andlauer, guys, because last night was his first game in the Bell Center as the owner of the Ottawa Senators. And this is a guy who is a diehard, born and bred Montreal Canadiens fan. So not even, like, strip aside the fact that Michael Andlauer was a minority owner of the Montreal Canadiens, this guy grew up as a diehard Montreal Canadiens fan. So last night was the first time he was ever in that building and cheering against the Habs. And so I loved it. So, you know, Michael Andlauer for years, guys, had three season tickets right at the corner of the Zamboni at the Bell Center. And obviously when he sold his share of the team and he got rid of those season tickets, he went to Jeff Molson and he said, I got one request. On the night when Ottawa comes back for the first time, I want my old seats back. And so he sat there, and I'm sure if you watched the highlights last night, you would have seen Michael Andlauer on the glass, pounding the glass, celebrating. Those were his old seats that he used to sit in, cheering for the Habs for years. And last night he cheered for Ottawa, and they pulled out the win. So he, you know, it was a great conversation with him. He was gracious enough on a night where I think he had some emotions going through him to spend some time with me and just kind of walk me through what it's like to be a diehard fan of a team for 50-ish years. And then suddenly at the snap of a finger, switch allegiances.
Yeah, that's a super uncommon, weird scenario. It's crazy that he would want to do that and follow through, and they did. That's super cool. So give us the status of his team. What's going on? They win a couple of hockey games here. I mean, just what a strange year versus expectations. Where are things at, Ian?
Yeah, it's really crazy the way that this season is gone. And right now, they're at a point where they've got five of their last 6 points. And this was a really fun trip. I was in Philadelphia for the return of Shane Pinto, and all of the moms were on this trip. And you might have seen some of this kind of going viral. But there's a great – this is probably the best vibe around this team all season. And yet you still look at the standings, and they're in last place, right, in the conference and last place in the division. But it does feel different. There's a little bit more structure. Claude Giroux told us after the game last night, and Jake Sanderson too, that, you know, a few weeks ago, if they were in the lead, they'd get super nervous. And so they, you know, they'd be up by one, and all of a sudden they'd squeeze the sticks and the game would get away from them. And that was going on for a long time. And they say that they've been able to calm down a little bit. And I think that there's a little bit of credit that goes to Jacques Martin. His personality is very calming. He's behind the bench. Daniel Alfredson's been doing a lot too. So I think you're starting to see a little bit of the Jacques Martin, Daniel Alfredson, kind of their fingerprints on this team. And they're playing good hockey. Now, granted, in the last week or so, they've beaten Montreal twice, San Jose, you know, Philadelphia. So not necessarily the best teams in the league, but they hung tough with Winnipeg on the weekend. They scratched a point out of them. But now you look at the schedule, they got Boston tomorrow and the Rangers on Saturday. So maybe we'll have a better idea if they've actually legit turned a corner by the time they play that game on Saturday.
And where is the fan base? Because there was so much positive vibes with a new ownership group, a new billionaire is going to come in, and we're not going to have to hear nickels and dime stories anymore. And here you are right around Christmas, now the All-Star break, and the sense is that can we get hot? Can we get ourselves back in a race? Or we're in a position where we just got to play 40-plus games thinking that we got to get ready for next season?
Yeah, Kipper, I think it's the latter, to be honest. I think if you're a player, you go in with the mindset of, hey, until we're eliminated, we have a chance. But I think from a fan's perspective, the ship has probably sailed. Like, they would need a Hamburglar 2.0 run. Like, the year that Andrew Hammond took them on, he went like 20 wins, one loss. That's what they would need in order to get back to playoffs. So I don't see them replicating that. So for the fans, I think they're just looking for some stability. They want to know kind of who can you win with. I do think that there's a feeling that they can't run it back with the same group. You know what I mean? Like even if they played really well down the stretch, I think there's been too many years here where this team has lost games to start the year. Like the act has been the same. So maybe it's time to change one character or two. And I'm not talking about Brady Tkachuk or Timmy Stützle or Jake Sanderson. I think those guys are untouchable. But I do think that the fans would be open to the idea of, okay, like, if you play well down the stretch, that's great. But we've learned that that doesn't necessarily carry over. I think they'll have a new coach to start next season. And I think maybe a roster move as well. If those two things are done and they look a little bit better down the stretch, I think fans will be happy. I just don't think that there's a playoff spot in the cards for this team.
In talking to a couple of my Senators buddies, their concern is that, you know, you turn it around and you start to win some games. Okay, so you make the draft pick a little bit worse or whatever. But in the process, you trade away guys who help. Like Jacob Chychrun is a name that has come up. Or, you know, we've mentioned Shabbat. Not that that's really, you know, just potential, you know, changes they could make. You know, you need good players to win games. And I think the temptation to sell for teams when it's tough to get these guys. What are your thoughts on heading towards the trade deadline, what they will do?
You know, Chychrun to me, and I had a great conversation with Jacob Chychrun in Montreal. And look, guys, I want to say something. He's been really disappointed and hurt. He understands why his name's in the trade rumor mill. Like, don't get me wrong. He knows. He gets it. He's a smart guy. What he doesn't like is that there's people suggesting that he doesn't like Ottawa.
Right.
And that he doesn't like being there. So he just wanted to correct that. And he was pretty adamant that, look, I love it in Ottawa. I'm living 5 minutes from my sister, 10 minutes from my grandpa. Like, this is an awesome setup for me. I love it. So that part of it notwithstanding, I do think where it's going to be interesting for Steve Staios and Dave Poulin is they have three, and not to get too into the weeds here, but they have three left shot defensemen, all of whom are kind of premium players. You're paying $8 million to Jake Sanderson, $8 million to Thomas Chabot, and Jacob Chychrun has a year and a bit left at 4.6. And theoretically, he's going to need more money, right? Yeah. So can you guys think of a team in the NHL that pays three defensemen $8 million each and they all play on the same side?
Okay, Ian, hold on for a second, though. Sorry, I don't want to cut you off, but like, I know it was Pierre Dorion that traded for him, but we all saw that coming. So, like, what was he thinking?
Yeah, it's a great question, Kipper. And the thought was one of them would play on their offside, be it. And I think the feeling was Chychrun. It just hasn't worked. Chabot and Chychrun have played together. It hasn't been a great pairing. Sanderson's been good with Artem Zub, but they just it feels like almost the old square peg round hole with Chychrun. And but somebody's got to go, and I'm not saying it's Chychrun. I'm just saying somebody amongst that group of left-handed shots is probably going to have to go, and I'm not moving Jake Sanderson if I'm Steve Staios.
Yeah, it kind of puts you in a little bit of a logjam there. You know, you talk about not being able to really look at this as a year. You make a push for playoffs or whatever, and that's really unfortunate because I believe they have enough talent there to have done more than they did. Did they wait too long to make the coaching move? And to add on to that, is there any chance they don't change the coaching staff that they have in there now?
Yeah, the hindsight is 20/20, right? But I think what's frustrating for Ottawa fans, guys, is that the story of this season in October, November, that was the story of last season and the season before and the season before that. Like every year, this team would come out and they'd win four of their first 15 games. They'd submarine their playoff chances right away. Then they would play really well. So this year, when they did the same thing and they face planted out of the gate, I do think that there was an appetite from the fan base to change it out. Where I think there was an issue was that Mike Andlauer and Steve Staios felt like they just showed up the first week of October. They were trying to just dip their foot into the pool, so to speak. And Ottawa fans were like ready for the cannonball in the middle of the pool. So there was a disconnect there. And finally, we got to the middle of December and it became the situation was untenable for DJ Smith moving forward. The fan base was all over him. There was a lot of problems. So they had to let him go. But in hindsight, yes, I think, all things being equal, if Mike Andlauer took over the team in June, I think maybe he would have a little bit more of a chance to come in and, you know, say, I'm going to make some changes and do what I wanted to do. But he didn't really have that opportunity, and he waited for 2 months into the season. And unfortunately for Ottawa fans, they've seen that movie, you know, 3 or 4 years in a row.
And where would this team be if they just had better goaltending? That's it.
Fair.
Yeah, you know what? I bet you if you injected DJ Smith, actually, you probably wouldn't have to inject him with truth serum. You could probably just ask him off the record. What, like, DJ, what's the biggest reason why you're out of a job right now? I think he would say goaltending. And that's where I will defend him. He's got a lot of people that have said he ran a loose program and he didn't hold people accountable and whatever. But boy, oh boy, he just didn't get help from goaltending. And it's part of the problem. And you're getting an .880 save percentage, I think, on most nights when he was there. That's not good enough to win. Korpisalo's been a lot better lately. But, yeah, absolutely. And I think the issue, too, for DJ Smith, if you go through his tenure, like they had Matt Murray, they had Phil Gustavson, they had Cam Talbot, they had now it's Korpisalo. It's not like they just had one goalie. It's like five or six goalies struggled, right, under the system. And at some point, you have to say, okay, let's change out the coach. But yeah, absolutely. I think goaltending was a huge factor.
Okay, just one more on the goaltending. There's only one that had signed a five-year, $4 million contract. It's like that contract ain't going away anytime soon here. So is he playing now for the thought that you could still be our guy come next October?
Isn't it remarkable that 3 months into his five-year deal, we're having this conversation. And I'm not going to suggest that this is like Jack Campbell. Like,
but it can be.
But it could be a little bit. Yeah, absolutely. It could be. I don't think they're at that point yet. But, you know, he's been up and down. But again, that's also a function of the team has been up and down in front of him. And he's looked a lot better in the last week or so. And the team has looked a lot better. So there's absolutely some room. And look, the cap hit is $4 million. It's not five. It's not five and a half. But still, like, I think if you went back to July 1st and you asked people, what was the biggest kind of, what was the contract that made you, your eyes pop out the most? I think the term on Corpusalo was the one for a lot of people. And it was a gamble. It was a risk. And so far it hasn't looked good, but he has played a lot better here in the last week or so.
It was a gamble. I was going to ask you about Shane Pinto. I didn't even mean to do that. I swear. Okay. Anyway, so he's come back for two games. He's been very good. I think, you know, you would expect. What have you seen out of him through two games, and where does that go? Is this a guy that they'll want to see a run of games from before they sign his next contract, or would that be underway already?
Well, it's, yeah, I think they had talks. Like in talking to Shane, they absolutely, it sounded like they discuss the idea of longer term, whatever. But I think for the here and now, he was like, I just want to get up and running. Let's just do the 1 year deal. But this is going to be really interesting. We talked about a logjam for Ottawa on defense. They also have an interesting situation at center ice where Tim Stützle is they're locked in number one guy, but they got Norris, they got Pinto, they got Ridley Gregg. Like, those are four. They've never really had a stretch of games with all four of those guys in the lineup. And what do the puzzle pieces look like? So I'm curious, like, if you're Pinto, if you sign a long-term deal, my guess is they're paying you to only be a number three center, right? Mm-hmm. Because Norris and Stützle are ahead of you. If you're Pinto, do you want to pigeonhole yourself into that? That's what I would wonder. So he's looked really good. Guys, he's so responsible defensively. The kid's only played 100 games in the NHL. He is a really smart 200-foot player, always supporting the play, always just the right place, the right time, wins faceoffs. He's your prototypical 2-3 centerman. And I just don't know where all the puzzle pieces fit. But the irony in all of this is Ottawa's capped out. They have no, real farm system. And they're not in a playoff spot. Like, it's kind of nuts when you think about it in the big picture. But they were able to get Pinto in without having to do too many cap gymnastics there.
And as far as Stales is concerned, he's not scared at all to tell anybody that he'd like to kind of shake it up. He's looking for something that can just maybe jolt this team into something that could get out of the gate real strong next October. So you tell me who that is. There's a lot of young pieces here, and some of them are making really good money, but if there was one that could move, who would you trade? Would you move, Batherson? Would you move Norris? Like, who are we talking about to jolt?
Yeah, and like I said, I wouldn't move Stützle, I wouldn't move Tkachuk, and I wouldn't move Sanderson. Like, those, for me, if I'm in Steve Stales' chair, those are my untouchables. Batherson at $4.9 million, when he's playing well, it's a really good contract. He's super skilled guy. When he's going at under $5 million, he gives you top six production. I'd be hesitant to trade him based on the cap hit. To me, it comes down to Shabbat and Chychrun. It really does. Like, to me, that's the conundrum. That's the room. And they have to make a decision. And this is why I think Steve Stales and Dave Poulin are in an advantageous situation. They can make a move here with either of those guys or any guy. They're not emotionally attached to anybody. They didn't sign any of these guys. They didn't draft any of these guys. They didn't trade for anybody. As you guys know, general managers, you can sometimes you almost get guilty of falling in love with players when you draft them and you sign them and you become emotionally invested. Steve and Dave are not invested emotionally in any of these guys. But if you're asking me, I think it comes down to those two, and they have to make an organizational decision. Do they see Chychrun as their guy or Shabbat as their guy? And if the answer is one or the other, you trade them this summer. Shabbat, by the way, guys, has a no trade clause that kicks in July 1st.
Ooh. Something to watch for.
Yeah.
Hey, Ian, great stuff, man. Really appreciate you coming on the show. Just prior to you coming on, I told the guys that we kind of hung out with each other every once in a while here at Sportsnet. And
New Year's Eve.
Well, I listen, saw
you. You always had that night.
when I was in the mix with my group to buy the Ottawa Senators, Ian put out a story about me and him where I bought him lunch New Year's Day, and he told this story. And I just want to say, in the future, do not tweet anything that remotely describes me as being nice. Please. you're ruining my reputation.
I'm evolving. You're one of the nice guys, and you know it. And everyone knows it that's worked with you. So,
hey, Ian, great stuff, man. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks, Ian. Appreciate it, man.
You got it, guys. Thanks for having me.
Wow, that's good stuff right there on the Ottawa Senators, just in terms of what would you do?
Well, Steve Stales. You know, I am a believer in a lot of the players in Ottawa. I really love watching Stützle play. You know, love Brady Tkachuk. I like a lot of what they have. I don't think trading Jacob Chychrun helps you. The Shabbat thing's interesting. I understand what he's talking about with, you know, it's a lot of money on one side of your D.
I don't know, man. It's just losing environments lead to bad choices.
Yeah, totally.
And it's a losing environment. They've been losing for a long time. And one of those guys goes, they're all really good.
How do you replace
them? I never understood Pierre Dorion's push for Chychrun when you had Sanderson, Shabbat, like Ian said, three guys that kind of play this a similar type of role.
Yeah,
and
same side.
It reminded me exactly of San Jose going and getting Erik Karlsson.
Yeah, when you had Brent Burns.
When you had Brent Burns leading the way. So it's a chemistry thing.
I think a lot of this,
that's
you
a
know,
good comparison, Kip. You bring in a guy that's the exact same thing. What are the guys thinking?
And, you know, maybe the thinking is, hey, you know, we could trade this guy if we had to again or something. But, you know, maybe the more I think about it, Chychrun does make sense for them.
Chychrun, like, they both want the puck.
Yeah.
They both want to go. It's like
both top power play unit kind of guys.
Yeah.
Just, it's a chemistry thing. It's not a talent thing.
Ottawa's close, man. For a team that's dead last.
I would say they're not close.
I don't look at Columbus or San Jose or Chicago and go, a couple pieces.
Well, we'll talk about Columbus a little bit more in news and notes with their loss to the Edmonton Oilers last night. But I don't hate the Jackets.
Jackets are dusty.
They got some guys. Anyways, you want to do some game time?
Some guys.
They got game time? It's game time, presented by Bet365. Visit the app for latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19+. Ontario only. Please play responsibly. So a couple of them I'm looking at tonight. If you like the Winnipeg Jets in this game, they're undermanned. Obviously, Scheifele's out. Plus 125. Leafs are huge favorites on home ice. Minus 150. Leafs are minus 150.
Are the Leafs favorites?
Leafs are favorite?
Big, yeah, minus 150. Pretty sizable favorite.
Are they still favorites to win the Stanley Cup?
No, I can check who's still favorite. I don't know
if
who. I can check the favorite on that.
A gambling mind, you wouldn't bet a dollar on the Leafs in that game.
So they're minus 150. Yeah, I would recommend that. They could obviously win, but that's not a good number. It's
getting
great.
Jets as it's underdogs.
Great value on the Jets, who are one of the best teams in the league, coming in Toronto, who love playing in Toronto. And one of the other ones I'm looking at here, where did I have it? I like the Boston Bruins against the Carolina Hurricanes on home ice. Loved the way the Bruins looked the other night against the Jets. I just think they're just humming along again. They look so good. Still not sold in Carolina. They're minus 140, not that huge a number, but I don't usually take favorites like that, but I do like the Bruins a lot on home ice tonight.
Carolina had a goalie. Did they claim Spencer Martin? Was that them that did that?
And your answer, Kipper, for who do you think the favorite for the Stanley Cup is according to Bet365?
Yes, they did claim Spencer Martin.
Okay. Last time I got it right, it was Vegas. No?
I think it's the Edmonton Oilers.
Have you looked?
Have they snuck in there?
The Edmonton Oilers are the favorite to win the Stanley Cup at plus 750.
You obviously
have to take in some, hey, they're hot right now, let's get your money kind of thing. Like, it's all top of mind. But for them to put that at plus 750 is crazy. And guess who the second favorite is?
Not the Leafs.
Oh, Vancouver.
Yeah, I was going to say
Vancouver. The top two favorites are Vancouver and Edmonton. Boston's plus 850, and then you have the Jets at 9-1. So in the top three favorites, according to Bet365, three of them are Canadian teams.
What are the Leafs?
The Leafs are down the list, fellas, plus 1,700.
Jeff, 5 there, Colorado or Dallas?
Colorado is plus 900. Dallas is 10-1, Kip.
All right.
So, there you go. I'm looking down. There's not a ton of value outside of that. Like, it really...
Can I tell you my theory on these Stanley Cup bets?
Mm.
Is that you don't tend to get a ton more value by placing these bets early. Like, going into playoffs, you'll still get comparable odds generally. Mm-hmm. So I tend to wait on
that. And just at the President's Trophy favorites too, the Boston Bruins at plus 275, Canucks plus 350, and Jets plus 400. So there you go for the President's Trophy.
All righty.
And that was Game Time, presented by Bet365. Visit the app for latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus. Ontario only. Please play responsibly.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get into some news and notes, including expansion.
What?
Yes.
What?
I'm telling you.
No way.
There's just so many good players in the league. I think we need another team.
It is out there.
Buddy, you're up. You're next in.
The talk is out there.
Let me tell you, from a guy who played at the East Center in Salt Lake City, I got thoughts.
Oh,
you've got thoughts. All right. There's Gerard Gallant thoughts. There's the Oilers and their record-breaking goaltender, Skinner. There's the Calgary Flames, their playoff aspirations.
Bad L last night for
them. Bye-bye.
No, not yet. But
Not yet. Okay.
Let's
plenty more.
After the break.
Plenty more after the break. Listen to these commercials so we can pay our bills. And we're back after this.
Get smarter when you listen to Hockey Talk, the Hockey PDOcast with Dmitry Filipovich. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Nick Kiprios, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee. We're talking expansion.
Why?
Because the Utah Jazz owner expressed a desire for the NHL to bring a team to Utah.
So you can just do that?
I don't.
I'm going to go be like, yeah, I don't know anything, but I desire another one in Toronto. Right. Is that allowed? The West End Weapons. Play at Rennie Park.
I'm just thinking out loud here. Like, let's play the, like, did you ever notice game that, like, I don't know, is it a coincidence that this story's out the same day that,
listen, I'm glad you said it.
You know, let's be honest here.
Great observation.
Hockey Canada stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad you said it.
Is it a coincidence?
Because people are saying it. So I'm glad that's being represented here. However, it can be other things are happening at the same time.
For sure.
Like, I don't think it's impossible that, like, this news, it's just news that came out in the same day.
I think it's an excellent theory, Kipper. How's that sound?
Yeah.
That you're right.
It's just a crazy tinfoil hat, like, to be like, all right, news is coming out. We need something. What do we got? Expansion in Salt Lake City. Like, there's got to be meat to this.
You got to dig up a better story than that to cover something up, like, what's going on. Like, it's not, no one cares about expansion.
I'm not a conspiracy theory. Can't do it.
All right. I think there's...
No, listen. It's coming. What it's real.
Expansion?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, they're going to 34 teams.
Ugh.
They can't. There's not enough good players. And you know what? Fans can't even follow the league anymore. You can't have 500 teams.
They're going to send scouts to Sammy's games now.
Who are the Zags? If we pick
it up. It doesn't matter.
Matty Hughes can fly the
West End Weapons.
He can fly.
They don't care about how
quality
great
the product.
Listen, you're going to find players to play. And it might be on some nights. It might not be very pretty to watch, but
I'd have had a chance.
We're talking about
the owners want over the money.
$2 billion on the table.
For
to
two,
split
two teams.
Against, to split it with 32 teams.
Yep, you'd have played second line at least your whole career in a 34-team league.
Yeah, the building might have been empty. But I wouldn't care.
No. You'd be making that second line money.
But
17 goals in a 21-team league. You'd be a rich man.
If only there was a semi-failing hockey team that played in a college arena that they can't
that
find a rink
somewhere.
That you could move to Salt Lake City.
Yeah.
If only there were
great,
one like that.
Great observation.
I got to tell you, I think players would be fallen all over themselves to go play in Salt Lake City.
Really?
Really?
Well, I mean, it's
isn't it a kind of a dry place?
Well, it depends if you like to have fun or not. If you're a family man, you'd love to live there.
Buddy, listen, I just went and watched a hockey game in Vegas.
Yeah.
I'd like to play there, please.
Yeah, well, young guy, I can see that for sure. You know, when I was in Utah, you have to be a member at the bar to enter it. So you have to pay like your $10 membership fee to get a card or whatever. You can't order a double. Like, so they give you a sidecar of alcohol to pour in your own drink, and the bars close at 10.
So or 11, sorry. Who wants to play there? Slavin?
No, that's the thing, is that it's not for partiers. Yeah. But for a family man, what a great place to live. It's beautiful.
So you got to have a high-character team
to play
there.
So what you're saying is this team will have 23, 35-year-olds.
And Vegas is going to have 35, 23-year-olds? Does that work?
Yes. Pretty much.
I'm telling you, it's a great family environment.
But I really don't mind Salt Lake City as a, hey, let's try it. Like, the Atlanta thing to me is the most offensive thing ever.
They're building an arena.
No more arenas.
No, it's coming.
Stop that.
It's coming.
Stop.
One more thing on Salt Lake City.
I'm starting to believe Atlanta's coming back.
Oh,
I suppose it's second most sunny days of any city in the U.S. outside Phoenix. Arena in Atlanta? Do you think Atlanta's real?
Yeah, it's coming.
So Salt Lake and Atlanta?
Well,
what was that you said there?
I don't know. Houston.
Second most sunny days per year.
Where?
In Salt Lake City.
What?
The sunny place.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
The city of Houston's name is out there as well. So to your point, do you move Arizona up to Utah and then slide in two more teams?
Oh my God.
What?
So we're going to trade Arizona to Utah. We're going to add
Atlanta.
And then we're going to add
Houston.
Quebec City can just go kick rocks.
Can I not to get the great observation drop ready again here, but like, if only there was a country just north of America that really loved this sport.
No, you know what I heard?
What would that be like? More teams in that country?
I had heard that like the league looks at Canada and says, we've got 7 and we only have 25 in the U.S.
So
and they don't think 25 is enough to cover the U.S.
So what about the second team in Toronto theory, which we've kicked around a little bit in the past?
Yeah, that'll come
that's
around.
Team 35, you think?
We don't know where a few other teams might be in the equation either by then, but we're talking about something that might be, I don't know, 2 or 3 years from deciding. But yeah, it's out there because we've got this question mark on what the Toronto Maple Leafs are going to look like in 2 or 3 years with ownership between Bell and Rogers.
Yeah.
If there's a potential split down the road, then you start trading pieces.
Yeah.
Does one end up with the Leafs and the other one says, okay, maybe a second team? Does a side go, can we have a baseball team too in Montreal?
So yeah, you look at like Bell getting their own versions of whatever.
Yeah,
got two great texts contributing to this, which I love. Said, I hope Atlanta comes back to the NHL. It's the only way Quebec City will ever get a team when Atlanta inevitably moves.
That's good.
Right? Good point.
That's good.
And so, George Oakville says, but what about a tiering like a premiership league?
Yeah.
24 in one.
Yeah.
And a bunch in the other.
Just so sold. You couldn't sell me harder on that.
Like, it's still the NHL.
You never do it.
It's still the NHL.
Yeah.
But there's tier one, tier two.
Yeah, league.
Listen, so in 3 or 5 years, like, who knows what this league's going to look
like.
Two
leagues, easy.
Yeah. But
one good one, one bad one.
That's supposed to be, isn't
it? Yeah, I guess you're right.
You just need to relegate San Jose and call up, quick Google, good American League team X.
I don't know.
I don't know who they are.
Peoria still have a team?
Definitely not.
Okay. What's the Sound Tigers? Do they still have a team?
Sound Tigers. Yeah, call them up. For them,
yeah.
All right, let's go to Alberta. Where do you guys want to go, Edmonton or Calgary?
I think we should probably talk about Edmonton winning 14 games in a row.
Yeah, it's impressive.
I will say, Columbus took it to them for 2 periods. Mm-hmm. They didn't have anything, and then Columbus did what they always do in the third period, and they blew it. But I came away from watching that game, and I watched them play the Leafs earlier in this year a couple times. They're not that far away from being a competitive team, Columbus. Like, they have some players in that team that are really... That Fantilli is unbelievable.
Just unbelievable. Stop it for a second.
I know.
What?
I know.
Okay.
They play.
Everyone has a couple.
Can we see if the current players still want to be there in two years?
Johnny Gaudreau is having a down year, but he doesn't suck. He had moments in that game. Like, I'm telling you, they're not terrible.
We can't go.
Boone Jenner's a hard guy to play against.
We can't take 3 steps without hearing another player wants to leave the Columbus Blue Jackets.
I just don't think they suck that bad.
Counterpoint, yes, they do.
Okay. They can play. They can score. They have offensive talent. They're a flashy, fun team to watch.
Your tier two NHL
for sure.
in a few years.
For sure. Yeah. Okay.
They could be the 25th best team.
I've watched them a few times this year, and I've been impressed with their talent.
I know. I'm being unnecessarily ridiculous. I like Voronkov. I think he's a good young player, and then Chinnikov's all right, too. But I just feel like everyone has a couple guys. That's all.
Fantilli should be Rookie of the Year. He's amazing.
He is really
Should
amazing.
We be talking about Stu Skinner and his turnaround since, what, they sent Jack Campbell to the minors?
What, do they and just now, unplug him and plug him back in? Like, what
just,
happened?
You know, breaking Grant Fuhr records. And
11 straight wins for Skinner.
Yeah.
Which breaks Fuhr's record. Wow.
I don't know. That's one of the more inexplicable things ever. He was dreadful at the start of the year.
I can't believe Jack Campbell hasn't got another sniff.
I don't know. I haven't checked in on his game logs in
the
minors.
I've heard he's playing well.
Really?
Yes.
So, but if I'm them, I ain't screwing with this.
No.
Like, I guess you could call him up to be the backup goalie and play him the same amount you play Pickard or whatever, if that's how you want to do it. But you don't doing anything. Like I guess they just signed Corey Perry. But you don't want to do anything to upset this streak.
Yeah.
But, man.
Let me give you Jack Campbell's last four games. 939, 944, 941, 931.
Those are last quite quality numbers.
Four AHL starts.
Yeah.
Gotta get Jack back in the league.
Yeah? What's the rush? Skinner is, like, he kept them in that game. That could have been 6-1 in the second period. He was really, really good.
Dude, he looks so good against the Leafs.
What do the Oilers have on tap here to close out?
They go to Chicago comes there, and then they play Nashville, I think.
Yeah.
Okay.
You got it. So both at home.
Both
Chicago
at home.
And Nashville at home.
There's a real good chance this thing can keep going here.
Yeah.
And like, can we not have the All-Star break?
Yeah, they would love to keep going. I guess Corey Perry will get in conceivably the Saturday night before the All-Star break against the Predators.
Imagine they lose that one first game.
Yeah. Imagine.
Yeah, I can imagine. I can see it.
The Calgary Flames, that's a tough pill to swallow, blowing a lead.
And, it is.
And listen, it's got to be inevitable now just in terms of what pieces you want to move off of, but they got to prep now.
Think so?
Yeah.
I mean, the West is almost set, you know, basically a little battle for Arizona and St. Louis, maybe Seattle to try to find their way in there. But, you know, the Flames are, they're lagging a bit here. And if they are going to make moves, I mean, you should kind of sooner the better, right?
Yeah, that one hurt. That one hurt.
Yeah, against a team that you're kind of in the hunt with there.
Directed with, yeah.
Where are you on Noah Hanifin in Calgary? Do you sign him or you do not sign him?
So I'm a big, I don't believe in tanking outright. And I think he's a really good player. I think you do sign him. You know, I would love to see teams say, we don't want to give Noah Hanifin 8 years. He thinks he's worth $7 or $8 million. We're going to give him $9 million times five or something, you know, like,
ooh.
You know, I'm just saying keep a guy,
yeah, I know.
But not give him an 8-year contract like they tend to do with everyone.
But in this case, it might be okay. And I only say that because I think he's one of the younger UFAs.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like he's 30.
No, he was Marner's draft, right?
Yeah.
That's what I wanted them to take.
Yeah. So it's not crazy. Like, he's, yeah, it's hard to believe, but he's just 26 years old.
Is he 26?
Yes. So even if he gave him an eight-year deal.
You're right.
It's not the end of the world. Yeah, and you need,
in that case,
to your point, you need players. You need them. And he is a legit 20-minute muncher.
And what do you think the career peak, age-wise, of defensemen is? I bet you don't think it's younger than 26.
I would say probably hitting their stride around 27, 28 would be exactly the point.
So if you're placing the bet on getting the prime of Hanifin's career for $8 million, I'd make that bet.
Like, and he's, like I said, he's 26 now. He fits into the younger mold still of your next up-and-comers.
Yeah, I'm going to take that back on Hanifin. That was a bad contract by me. I've been fired by myself, and I'm hiring Nick Kypreos. Yeah, he's a good guy to give eight years to, after all.
I'm going to sell you some swampland.
I'm convincible. That's my strength, is I listen, change my opinion.
All right.
I don't have a great feel for Hanifin's game, really. Like, he's never been a, obviously he's a pretty good NHLer. He's been around a while. He's just, to me, I would be scared to give him a long contract. It's not going to kill you, but he just.
Listen, I think he's one of those guys where you can safely say that he'll never win a Norris.
Yeah.
So don't pay him like he's going to win a Norris.
Right.
And there is a group of guys that we say are still good, but.
Yeah.
And Morgan Rielly may be one of those guys in Toronto. And here he is the number one guy. Mm-hmm. But do you believe that Morgan Rielly has ever a chance to win a Norris? Maybe if the stars are aligned. But he's got to be surrounded by some Eagles that can really soar around him on that blue line.
Yeah.
I think
Hanifin has all the tools. Yeah. I don't think he has the hockey IQ to be quite that level. Right.
I think Morgan Rielly's better than Hanifin, though.
Yes, I do too.
For sure.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah.
I'm with you. But
I understand the comparison.
I don't know what skills contest event he would win against Hanifin.
I've got Jacob Chychrun in Ottawa right now in the same place as I do Hanifin, where, listen, you can find some warts in his defensive game, but the guy's going to play 20 minutes, 22 minutes every night for the next seven years.
Dying to get good D
around
the league.
And the big thing for Calgary and Ottawa, well, I mean, not Ottawa, but Calgary, is if you let him walk out the door when he leaves, like, who's coming back in and taking those 22 minutes? And how much do you have to pay
and
that guy?
You're going to have to pay the next guy $5, $6 million anyway to get less than you were going to get from Hanifin.
So take him.
I'm sure that's where Calgary is at, that they would. It's just, if I'm Hanifin and I look at where the group is at and where it's going, I'm not sure. I'm not sure about Calgary.
And we've heard sometimes he wants to sign there. Sometimes he doesn't want to sign there.
Yeah.
He's American. Does he want to go back home? Does he not? But like anything else, throw him a number. $50 million, 55, and now you get him to start picking the contract and not the city.
Yeah. No, I like that too. And there is a couple million bucks that changed a lot of minds. So pay him a couple extra.
Mrazek got paid now. The latest in the line of...
What'd he get?
Yeah, I think 4.25 for two years.
Not per year.
Yeah, per year.
This guy has to have made the most money of a not good NHL goalie the last 5 years.
Listen, they're just overpaying. He's never going to get that anywhere else in the league, 4.5 for two years.
No, sorry, it's a two-year, $8.5 million contract, so 4.25 per year.
He's never going to get 4.25 anywhere else.
So are they just anticipating sucking for three more years? Like, they're just going to waste these years of Bedard?
Two more years of suckage seems to be the commitments.
And we're overpaying for 2 years.
That's the Foligno contract. That's Mrazek.
That's wrong to me.
They're saying to Bedard, here's where we're at for two more years. We're doing the salary floor thing.
How many years did the Penguins suck with Sid?
Couldn't have been more than one.
Yeah. Oilers sucked for a while.
Matthews rookie year, didn't they make the playoffs?
They did make the playoffs. I just think... Like, I'm watching it with Wembanyama in the NBA, where...
What, do they have six wins now?
Spurs are awful. Yeah. Like, they're unwatchable, terrible team. And they surrounded him with nothing. It's like, you don't want to waste years of Bedard where it's
help
like...
Help him get better.
Help him get better. Like, put some guys around him. You're just admitting you're going to stink for a couple years? I don't know. It's a bad look to me.
All right, seven games on tap, including Winnipeg, Toronto, and Vancouver. Three Canadian teams. Give me a score, Winnipeg and Toronto, boys.
Leafs are going to find a way to get it to overtime and then have their hearts broken. 4-3.
Oh, they get back in the beloved loser point
four
category?
4-3.
Yeah.
You're giving three against three.
But not four.
But not four against Halibut.
Against Winnipeg.
Yeah. Sammy?
3-2 Jets.
All right.
Regulation.
Vancouver, St. Louis?
Vancouver wins 15-0.
All right, pick your game, watch it, enjoy it, because you know where you're going to find us. Same time tomorrow on The Real Kipper and Bourne Show. Our thanks to Ian Mendez, Ken Wiebe. Great stuff. And if you get a chance, give us a rating and review. We'd love to hear from you. We're back again tomorrow. Have a great night, everybody.